Next case for argument is Medlock versus Indiana University. Mr. Fraser.
May it please the court. I don't think that there can be any serious argument that the resident leadership supervisors are not state actors. They were paid employees of Indiana University. They were following the A to Z guide to do the work of Indiana University. We are not challenging the regulatory scheme that allowed them to come into the room. We think the regulatory scheme to come in and check pipes, open windows, and for, you know, George Foreman grills, that's reasonable. Indiana University has the right to be able to check for those things, and those resident leadership
Why
advisors.
Does that make it a plain view case? They're allowed in. They see the plant, and so they call the police.
I don't think there's
that. I don't get that. If you're lawfully in a place and you see evidence of a crime, you can certainly notify the police.
I think that they were well within their rights to notify the police. But where I think that the Fourth Amendment was violated, Your Honor, is when the police, at that point in time, they then have probable cause to be able to get a warrant. The police do not get a warrant, and I think in order to get around the warrant requirement, you have to have one of the two major exceptions, which would be exigent circumstances or consent, and neither are present in this case. Mr. Medlock wasn't in the room. There was no reason. Officer King certainly could have called another officer and had them stand by outside the room. So I think that when the door was opened up for Officer King, and at that point Officer King then proceeded into the room, that's where you have the first violation, the Fourth Amendment violation. I think the second violation is after Officer King comes into the room and he confiscates the marijuana that's on the desk, he then leaves, he's going to the elevator, and by all indications, all he's going to do is write my client a ticket. But as he's going to the elevator, then Mr. Monahan Estes peeks around a closet door and finds the marijuana plant. That, I think, that's where we get a couple violations there. The first one would be,
I think that a jury would award damages? For what?
For what, Your Honor? I mean, he was out of school for a year. I mean,
he was out of school for a year anyway. That had nothing to do with the police. Look at all the violations they found, and you know, fire violations, and of course the marijuana. They didn't need the police in order to kick him out of school.
But they chose to do it, and we can't ignore the fact they chose to involve the police.
Yes, but they would have kicked him out anyway. They didn't need the police for that.
Well, but I don't think where they would have kicked him out, Your Honor, is without the plant. And they wouldn't have found the plant.
Look, there was a lot of else in their room, and they could certainly search the entire room, including the closet with the plant.
I think the peeking around the closet door in and of itself is...
What a waste of time to bring a lawsuit of this sort when there's absolutely no harm resulting from the involvement of the police. He wasn't prosecuted. He wasn't punished. He just was kicked out, as he should have been. And they didn't need the police there to kick him out. They had all the evidence.
Your Honor, they did. Charges were filed against him, and he did have to.
But he wasn't punished. I'm saying.
He was punished by being kicked out of the dorm.
He wasn't punished by the state for a crime. He was kicked out of school for gross violation of their rules, extremely bad behavior on his part, for which he deserved to be kicked out. And how you would expect any jury or any judge to award damages to a person like this because of some technical violation of the Fourth Amendment, I find that astonishing.
Aren't there presumed damages?
It's an extreme waste of judicial and legal professional resources.
Your Honor, my next issue is the...
What were you going to ask the jury in a case like this for, in the way of damages?
What I would ask a jury for, Your Honor, would be for the time that he lost from that year of his education.
That's not right, because he would have been kicked out of school even if there had been no police involvement.
Your Honor, I beg to differ. Had the marijuana plant not been found?
They would have found the marijuana plant. They were entitled to search the closet along with the rest of his room. They would have found it. They would have kicked him out. I don't think you could show any causal relation between anything that happened, between the police involvement and anything that happened to him. That's why I'm asking you, what would you ask a jury for in the way of damages?
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree with your opinion. I think that under Platteville...
Look, they didn't need the police to search the closet. You'll agree with that, won't you?
No, I don't think they had the right to go into the closet.
You don't think that these residents had a right to go into his room?
No, they did have a right to go into his room.
Including the closet.
That's where I disagree.
Oh, come on. You don't think the school rules allowed them to look in a closet?
No, I don't think it did, because I think that once you start to look into drawers and look into open closet doors, that's where you violate the Fourth Amendment.
It's not his room. It's the school's room. There's a fire hazard here. Of course they're going to look in the closet.
There was no evidence of a fire hazard to cause someone to look into the closet.
Well, he's worried about smoke.
Your Honor, we cited that Commonwealth versus Nielsen case.
He's not supposed to smoke in his room, is he?
He is not.
It doesn't matter whether it's cigarettes or marijuana. So if they go into the room, as they're authorized to do, and they find that he's smoking, of course they would be remiss if they didn't look through his room.
Well, Your Honor, that's...
Closet. Whoever heard of... They can go in his room, but they can't go in his closet. That's ridiculous.
Your Honor, I just disagree, because I think under Platteville, I think where you open closet doors, I think where you open drawers, I think where you start to do those types of things, they can go in there and they can look for...
You do whatever you're authorized by the rules of your school to do.
Well, there's nowhere in the school rules that has ever been cited to me that gives anyone the right to be able to open closet doors. And I would say that in addition to that, the A to Z guide specifically states that there's no provision in the housing contract that gives residence hall officials the authority to consent to a search of a resident's room by police or other government officials. But
question, which you're not understanding, is what causal relationship there is between his expulsion and the presence of police. That's what I don't understand. Seems to me he would have been expelled anyway because of the search. Didn't even need the closet for that. They knew about the marijuana as soon as they entered the room, right? They knew he was smoking marijuana. They knew he had marijuana in his room and smoking it. They knew that without the closet, didn't they? Didn't they?
They could draw that inference, certainly, Your Honor.
Right. And so they were going to expel him.
Your Honor, the next issue that I brought forth is the issue of the denial of procedural due process. And I don't think that there's any evidence that my client posed a continuing danger to persons or property. And therefore, he was entitled to a pre-suspension hearing. And at the point in time that he was suspended, the marijuana had been taken, confiscated, and at that time as well, he had been evicted from the dormitory. So there's no continuing threat to the university at that point. And in order, under the Goss case, in order for that to happen, there has to be a continuing threat. And he wasn't a continuing threat at that point. So he should, and the reason this is so critical for him is once you get past the first phase of the hearings, which he missed, at that point there's no chance to...
I understand the hearing. He's caught with this. He's got no defense.
What he could have done, though, Your Honor, at that initial hearing, which he wasn't allowed to do later under the university rules, was to make arguments in mitigation. That he had entered counseling. Entered counseling.
Oh, come on.
Mr. Fraser, is it your position that if the closet door is not, or the closet isn't examined, that the likelihood is that with just the marijuana finding, that he wouldn't be expelled?
Now,
do we have anything from the record that indicate that would be the policy of the university? Is there, for a small amount? I mean, I'm just trying to frame up where you're coming from on. I understand that you think the search of the closet shouldn't have happened, but is your point that if that is excluded, that he never would have suffered the suspension for just the possession of what was found in open view?
Yes, because that's what both Dean Goldsmith and Provost Hansen talked about as causing him to be expelled, was what was found in the closet. They believed that because of what happened or was found in the closet, that he had to be, in their words, dealing drugs. So without that, without the plant, there wouldn't have been an expulsion. And in addition...
There would have been a what?
There would have been no expulsion without the plant.
Why not? There was the tube of marijuana on his desk.
Because both Provost Hansen and Dean Goldsmith testified that what caused them to suspend my client was the amount of marijuana that was found. And in addition to the plant being found in the closet, there was also bongs, several bongs, I believe. And that's what was in the closet was the critical evidence that caused the suspension.
Could the officer that you suggest that could have been placed outside the room while the other officer went and got the warrant that you believe would have been appropriate in this case?
Absolutely. Let
me finish. Is it your position that Mr.
Medlock,
could have gone in there and removed the plant?
No, because...
Could he have been excluded from the room by the officer that you posit would be standing outside there?
Yes, because I think that they had the right to be able to get the warrant. If Mr. Medlock insisted upon going into the room, that would have gave the officers the right to go into the room at that point, because that would have given them the exigent circumstances they need to be able to get around the warrant requirement.
But they did get a warrant.
After they had found everything in the room.
So what?
It's the United States Constitution, Judge Posner. And I just don't think we can say what to it.
What does the Constitution say?
The Constitution gives us the right to be free from unbridled government intrusion into our private lives.
Yeah, but they got a warrant. You're not saying it was improperly issued, right?
I am not arguing that the warrant's improperly issued.
So, in other words, it gets back to my question. I don't see any causal relation between what you're complaining about and what happened to him.
No.
Because they certainly could have gotten the warrant on the basis of the tube of of marijuana that was found on your client's desk.
But there's no...
So they would have gotten the warrant. They would have found everything, including the plant and the closet.
There's no evidence in this record that Officer King was going to get a warrant. The only evidence in the record is that he was going away, that he was walking to the elevator. He just thought he had found a little bit of pot, and he wasn't worried about what he had found. So based upon what Provost Hanson and Dean Goldsmith testified, that's why the warrant was issued, because of the additional marijuana. That's why he went back. That's why he called other officers. That's what Officer King specifically said. I went to get a warrant when I saw the plant. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Fraser. Mr. Stuckey?
May it please the court, good morning. My name is John Stuckey, and I'm here representing the appellees in the case. In this case, Mr. Medlock is claiming that his civil rights were violated when evidence of his drug use and his drug possession and his possession of illegal drug paraphernalia were removed from his dormitory room at Indiana University and then used against him in a subsequent disciplinary proceeding.
You'll have to speak a little louder and also stand in front of the microphone.
Yeah, that only records. It doesn't amplify, so we need to have your voice elevated, please.
I apologize. Mr. Medlock claims that this evidence was impermissibly used against him because it was gathered in violation of his Fourth Amendment rights under the U.S. Constitution. And the response of the appellees is twofold. Number one, the exclusionary rule on which Mr. Medlock's argument is premised doesn't apply in civil cases. It applies in criminal cases, but not civil cases. And we have cited to the court in our brief the INS versus Lopez Mendoza decision of the U.S. Supreme Court, which so holds. And by extension, if the exclusionary rule doesn't apply in civil cases, and it certainly has no application to a student disciplinary procedure. That's our first response. The second response is that the alleged constitutional violations were not committed and no impermissible searches or seizures occurred. In order for the actions of the resident hall advisors to have been violative of the Constitution, they have to be considered as state actors for Fourth Amendment purposes. And clearly, they were grad students at IU. They were.
You know, that argument has been put aside by your opponent. I mean, so he's conceded they're not state actors, and you have limited time. You don't want to go where you don't need to.
Thank you, Your Honor. So the question is, did they properly exercise the authority that they were granted by the university? And there is absolutely no evidence in the record that they exceeded the permissible scope of their inspection. As Judge Posner pointed out, there are all sorts of things that are subject to regulation and prohibition, illegal drugs just being one of them. Significantly, Mr. Medlock didn't argue through any of the disciplinary procedures that the evidence against him was gathered improperly or in violation of his constitutional rights. In fact, he admitted that this evidence was taken from his room, and he did not contest the propriety of the taking. With respect to Officer King, Officer King responded to a legitimate call from a resident assistant who had discovered prohibited illegal drugs. The door was opened for him by Mr. Monahan Estes, He looked into the room. He saw the container of marijuana on the desk of Mr. Medlock. He also smelled the odor of raw marijuana in the air, and on that basis concluded he had probable cause to go and take the marijuana and leave, which he did. He did not search the room at that point in time. He simply took the marijuana and left. Having suspended their institutional search to deal with what they discovered on their desk, the two resident advisors go back into the room to continue their search. And there's no evidence that they were acting under the direction of Officer King or any law enforcement personnel. They weren't instructed on what to do or what to look for or anything like that. There's absolutely none of that in the record. They go back into the room and begin documenting other violations by Mr. Medlock, the candles that they discovered, the ashtray with the spent ashes in it, the rolled up blanket against the door to prevent smoke from getting out or being detected. And then Mr. Monahan Estes looks around the closet door, and according to Ms. Clark, who's the other resident advisor, the door was open about a foot. So he looks around the corner, thinks he sees a marijuana plant in the closet, opens the door to confirm that. He does confirm that, and then at that point in time, the other residence hall advisor goes to retrieve Officer King, which he does.
Is your view that if it was a closed door, they could have opened it?
Yes.
How about the dresser drawers? Could they, at the point that we've got the marijuana that's been seen in open view, could they go, let's say it's a dresser with four or five drawers, could they pull all those drawers out?
They're trained when they see something illegal not to touch it but to call the police. So at that point, they would have done what they did here, which was to get the police back involved. And once the marijuana...
I thought you responded to me they could open the closet door if it had been closed in continuing their routine inspection.
Yes, sir.
In this case, it's not quite routine because they found something
correct
in advance.
Yes, sir.
I'm asking you, then, they probably could have, under your theory, opened everything. That is, if there's a dresser of drawers, they could take all the drawers out. If you could open the closet door, you could have taken out... He could have been stashing stuff in the bedroom dresser, I guess. I'm just trying to see the limits of the authority that's vested in the university here.
Yes, but in the context of discovering something illegal, they're not there.
Yes, I know, but suppose they just thought he was smoking cigarettes. It's not illegal. Then Judge Flom's I would have a similar question, Judge Flom. Do the school rules allow them to search through his, bureau drawers looking for cigarettes?
The A to Z guide says that if an extensive search is required, then they have to get university officials involved. And then they don't consider themselves to be...
They're right, I know, but that doesn't matter. Does the... Can school officials conduct such a search?
Yes, sir.
What does the classification of the RA's search have to do with the police officer's presence on the scene and the legality of his search and his presence in the room?
Well, he was there because they called him, obviously.
Right, but he stands on a different footing than they do. They are doing a regulatory search, which under ample precedent is okay in this context.
Absolutely correct.
But he is a law enforcement officer. He's there in a law enforcement capacity, and he's doing a law enforcement entry into the room and a law enforcement search. And so if this were not a civil suit in this context for damages associated with the suspension from the university, but a criminal prosecution, how would we analyze the Fourth Amendment issue with respect to the officer?
Well, we've cited cases, the Kappas case in particular, which is an Arizona case, in which which is very factually similar. It doesn't involve student discipline, but it does involve the question that you raise. And in that case, motion to suppress the evidence that was obtained by the officer was denied and affirmed on appeal. So from our standpoint, once he's legitimately at the scene and responding to a call and the door is open for him and he sees the container, under that line of authority, he is authorized to...
And that stands for what principle? Is that a plain view argument?
Yes.
Because
yes.
He's not. That doesn't address the legality of his entry into the room. He's got to be lawfully on the premises before the plain view doctrine comes into play. So if he's not lawfully in the room, then everything that follows after that is illegal, at least as a Fourth Amendment proposition, if this were a criminal case and the exclusionary rule applied. So just work with me on that. It doesn't apply in a civil case, but his entry into the room would be unlawful if this were a criminal matter? And excludable, the evidence would be excludable?
Potentially so. The case that I cited from Arizona was a criminal case. And in that case, a suppression motion was filed to exclude the evidence that the officer gathered.
But was the officer lawfully on the premises?
He was on the premises of the dormitory because he was responding to the call. And as the district court judge found, he had probable cause to enter the room, to seize the canister, and then depart.
Okay. Is there any obligation, Mr. Stuckey, on the university police officers to report criminal activities to the local authorities?
No, the IU Police Department is a separate jurisdiction.
These are sworn officers.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
On the due process argument against the university,
yes.
I'm unclear about the remedy that's at issue here. This plaintiff is eligible for reinstatement, as I understand it.
That's correct, and in fact, I believe he's back at IU now.
Okay.
How old is he? Or how old was he at the time of the case?
It was at least his second year at the university.
A sophomore, you said?
I believe it was at least his second year.
Mm-hmm. So do you know what's the remedy that's being sought? Expungement or something?
Damages.
But you can't get that against the university.
That's correct. Damages against the individual.
No, I understand that, but what remedy against the university, or I guess the Board of Trustees is technically the defendant here, right? What injunctive remedy?
That's been denied. I mean, the request for preliminary injunction was denied, and that was...
I understand that, but what exactly is he seeking, do you know, by way of injunctive relief, if he's already back at school?
I don't...
Does he want the record expunged, or...?
Yes.
I thought he wanted damages. Does he want damages?
That's what I heard Mr. Frazier say, and that's what the complaint says.
Pardon? I can't hear you.
Yes, sir. That's what I heard Mr. Frazier say just a moment ago, and that's what's in the complaint as well.
Anything further?
Just to briefly address the 14th Amendment claim, Mr. Medlock was summarily suspended from the university, but he did have the opportunity to present arguments for mitigation, not necessarily to the three-person panel who was the initial point of appeal, but he was allowed a further appeal to Provost Hansen, and she had plenary authority to modify the summary suspension or rescind it or take whatever action she thought appropriate, and so he did have the opportunity and did in fact argue for.
Well, what was his argument?
The gist of it was I'm in counseling. I'm not a continuing threat to the university. I have cleaned up my act, and it simply wasn't persuasive.
So if there are no further questions. So his suspension was for a year?
Yes, sir.
So it's the university's policy if they think somebody's a dealer, you just take a year off and you come back?
I wouldn't say that's the university's policy.
Could one read that into that? I mean, I'm just a little, you know.
Well, he's not automatically entitled to reinstatement. He has to reapply.
I see. All right. Well, he did not, right? He's not in attendance, is he, at the university? Or Mr. Fr- he is in attendance?
Huh? So, in other words, he can't reapply for a year, but after a year he can reapply. That's right. That's what it means.
Yeah, Mr. Fraser indicates that he's a student at the university now. We can confirm that, of course, when Mr. Fraser gets up.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Stuckey. So, Mr. Fraser?
Is that correct, Mr. Fraser? He's readmitted?
He is, Your Honor.
All right. So his damages were the year of loss of education,
yeah.
Or did he get education elsewhere during that year?
Yeah, he just worked.
He just worked.
And he also now works, is a part-time employee of the university. But
in what capacity?
But to address Judge Sykes' question about the injunctive relief, there's a letter in his file which accuses him of being a drug dealer, and that's been one of the primary reasons that we've pursued this, is to get that letter out of his file.
Get it out of the file.
Thank you.
What is the process of getting that letter out of the file?
It simply is the dean going to the file and destroying it.
So you made application for that?
Well, we were told it could never be done.
I see.
Because on his permanent record.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, what's his job with the university?
He works in the IT department.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Mr. Stuckey mentioned the fact that is correct, that there's no exclusionary rule in civil cases. So the fact that illegally seized evidence was used to support his expulsion, suspension, that would not itself be problematic. Doesn't that suggest that really you should have sued the police officers?
I did.
You did sue them?
Yeah, I sued Officer King as well.
So you have a remedy against the officers, but if the exclusionary rule has no application in a civil case, like his expulsion was a civil matter, then how would you have any remedy against them?
Well, there is a very limited exception to the rule of evidence not being admitted in civil cases in INS versus Mendoza-Lopez. And under rare circumstances, it can be found that the evidence should be admitted. And it's our position.
Wait, I don't understand you. It is far more, an immigration proceeding is far more serious than a school expulsion or suspension. So if there's no exclusionary rule in immigration, you think a fortiori, there's no exclusionary rule in school discipline.
Your Honor, I think that the exception that's set out in Mendoza-Lopez is applicable here because we're training resident leadership advisors to go in and find marijuana. They are specifically told that they are supposed to be doing it. And that is outside of the context of the regulatory scheme. And because they're trained to go in and find it and then report it, I think we have constant violations of the Fourth Amendment going on. So I think that this case is an exception that fits within the Mendoza-Lopez exception. And in addition to that, I also think that, and again, I respectfully disagree with you, sir, that I think that based upon what Provost Hanson and Dean Goldsmith said, had Mr. Monahan Estes not exceeded the scope of his search and peeked around the door, there would have never been an expulsion because no one would have ever found the plant. Thank you, sir.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Fraser and Mr. Stuckey. And...